Chapter 16. Leave takings. Lying on sweat-soaked sheets, staring at the ceiling, Perrin realized that the darkness was turning to gray. Soon the sun would be edging above the horizon. Morning. A time for new hopes. A time to be up and doing. New hopes. He almost laughed. How long had he been awake? An hour or more, surely, this time. Scratching his curly beard, he winced. His bruised shoulder had stiffened, and he sat up slowly. Sweat popped out on his face as he worked the arm. He kept at it methodically, though, suppressing groans and now and again biting back a curse, until he could move the arm freely, if not comfortably. Such sleep as he had managed had been broken and fitful. When he was awake, he had seen Fail's face, her dark eyes accusing him, the hurt he had put there making him cringe inside. When he slept, he dreamed of mounting a gallows, and Fail watching, or worse, trying to stop it, trying to fight White Cloaks with their lances and swords. And he was screaming while they fitted the noose around his neck, screaming because the White Cloaks were killing Fail. Sometimes she watched them hang him with a smile of angry satisfaction. Small wonder such dreams wakened him with a jerk. Once he had dreamed of wolves running out of the forest to save both Fail and him, only to be spitted on White Cloak lances, shot down by their arrows. It had not been a restful night. Washing and dressing as hurriedly as he could, he left the room as if hoping to leave memories of his dreams behind. Little outward evidence remained of the night's attack. Here a sword slashed tapestry, there a chest with a corner splintered by an axe, or a lighter patch on the stone-tiled floor where a blood-stained rug had been removed. The Majira had her liveried army of servants out in force, though many wore bandages, sweeping, mopping, clearing away and replacing. She limped about, leaning on a stick. A broad woman with her gray hair pushed up like a round cap by the dressing wound around her head. Calling her orders in a firm voice, with the clear intention of removing every sign of the stone's second violation. She saw Perrin and gave him an infinitesimal curtsy. Even the High Lords did not get much more from her, even when she was well. Despite all the cleaning and scrubbing, under the smell of waxes and polishes and cleaning fluids, Perrin could still catch the faint scent of blood, sharply metallic human blood, fetid Trolloc blood, acrid Murdral blood, with its stink that burned his nostrils. He would be glad to be away from here. The door to Loyal's room was a span across and more than two spans high, with an overlarge door handle in the shape of entwined vines level with Perrin's head. The stone had a number of rarely used Ogier guest rooms. The Stone of Tyr predated even the age of great Ogier stoneworks, but it was a point of prestige to use Ogier stonemasons, at least from time to time. Perrin knocked, and at the call of, "Come in," in a voice like a slow avalanche, lifted the handle and complied. The room was on a scale with the door in every dimension, yet Loyal, standing in the middle of the leaf-patterned carpet in his shirt sleeves, a long pipe in his teeth, reduced it all to seemingly normal size. The Ogier stood taller than a Trolloc in his wide-toed, thigh-high boots, if not so broad as one. His dark green coat, buttoned to the waist, then flaring to his boot tops like a kilt over baggy trousers, no longer looked odd to Perrin. But one look was enough to tell him this was not an ordinary man in an ordinary room. The Ogier's nose was so broad as to seem a snout, and eyebrows like long mustaches dangled beside eyes the size of teacups. Tufted ears poked up through shaggy black hair that hung nearly to his shoulders. When he grinned around his pipe stem at the sight of Perrin, it split his face in half.
"Good morning, Perrin," he rumbled, removing the pipe. "You slept well? Not easy after such a night as that. Myself, I have been up half the night writing down what happened."
He had a pen in his other hand and ink stains on his sausage-thick fingers. Books lay everywhere, on Ogier-sized chairs and the huge bed and the table that stood as high as Perrin's chest. That was no surprise, but what was a little startling was the flowers. Flowers of every sort and every color. Vases of flowers, baskets of them, posies tied with ribbon or even string, great woven banks of flowers standing about like lengths of garden wall. Perrin had certainly never seen the like inside a room. Their scent filled the air. Yet what really caught his eye was the swollen knot on Loyal's head, the size of a man's fist, and the heavy limp in Loyal's walk. If Loyal had been hurt too badly to travel, he felt ashamed at thinking of it that way. The ogre was a friend, but he had to. "You were injured, Loyal? Moraine could heal you. I am sure she will."
"Oh, I can get around with no trouble. And there were so many who truly needed her help. I would not want to bother her. It certainly is not enough to hamper me in my work."
Loyal glanced at the table where a large cloth-bound book, large for Perrin, but it would fit in one of the Ogier's coat pockets, lay open beside an uncorked ink bottle.
"I hope I wrote it all down correctly. I did not see very much last night until it was done."
"Loyal," Fael said, standing up from behind one of the banks of flowers with a book in her hands, "is a hero." Perrin jumped. The flowers had masked her scent completely. Loyal made shushing noises, his ears twitching with embarrassment, and waved his big hands at her, but she went on, her voice cool but her eyes hot on Perrin's face. "He gathered as many children as he could, and some of their mothers, into a large room, and held the door alone against Trollocs and Murdral through the entire fight. These flowers are from the Women of the Stone, tokens to honor his steadfast courage, his faithfulness." She made steadfast and faithfulness crack like whips. Perrin managed not to flinch, but only just. What he had done was right, but he could not expect her to see it. Even if she knew why, she would not see it. It was the right thing, it was. He only wished he felt better about the entire matter. It was hardly fair that he could be right and still feel in the wrong.
"It was nothing."
Loyal's ears twitched wildly.
"It is just that the children could not defend themselves, that's all. Not a hero. No."
"Nonsense." Fael marked her place in the book with a finger and moved closer to the Ogier. She did not come up to his chest. "There is not a woman in the stone who would not marry you if you were human, and some would anyway. Loyal, well named, for your nature is loyalty. Any woman could love that." The Ogier's ears went stiff with shock and Perrin grinned. She had obviously been feeding Loyal honey and butter all morning and hoped the ogre would agree to take her along, no matter what Perrin wanted. But in trying to prick him, she had just fed Loyal a stone without knowing it. "Have you heard from your mother, Loyal?" he asked.
"No."
Loyal managed to sound relieved and worried at the same time.
"But I saw Lefar in the city yesterday. He was as surprised to see me as I to see him. We are not a common sight in Tyr. He came from studying Shangtai to negotiate repairs on some Ogier stonework in one of the palaces. I have no doubt the first words out of his mouth when he returns to the studying will be, 'Loyal is in Tyr.'"
"That is worrying," Perrin said, and Loyal nodded dejectedly.
"Lefar says the elders have named me a runaway, and my mother has promised to have me married and settled. She even has someone chosen. Lefar did not know who. At least, he said he did not. He thinks such things are funny. She could be here in a month's time."
Fael's face was a picture of confusion that almost made Perrin grin again. She thought she knew so much more than he did about the world. Well, she did, in truth. But she did not know Loyal. Steading Shangtai was Loyal's home, in the spine of the world, and since he was barely past 90, he was not old enough to have left on his own. Ogier lived a very long time. By their standards, Loyal was no older than Perrin, maybe younger. But Loyal had gone anyway, to see the world, and his greatest fear was that his mother would find him and drag him back to the steading to marry, never to leave again. While Fael was trying to figure out what was going on, Perrin stepped into the silence. "I need to go back to the Two Rivers, Loyal. Your mother won't find you there."
"Yes, that is true."
The ogre gave an uncomfortable shrug.
"But my book, Rand's story, and yours and Matt's, I have so many notes already, but...
He moved around behind the table, peering down at the open book, the pages filled with his neat script.
I will be the one to write the true story of the Dragon Reborn, Perrin. The only book by someone who traveled with him, who actually saw it unfold. The Dragon Reborn, by Loyal, son of Arendt, son of Halen, of Steading Shangtai.
Frowning, he bent over the book, dipping his pen in the ink bottle.
That is not quite right. It was more...
Perrin put a hand on the page where Loyal was going to write. You'll write no book if your mother finds you. Not about Rand, at least. And I need you, Loyal.
Need, Perrin? I do not understand.
There are white cloaks in the two rivers, hunting me.
Hunting you? But why?
Loyal looked almost as confused as Fael had. Fael, on the other hand, had donned a complacent smugness that was worrisome. Perrin went on anyway. The reasons don't matter. The fact is that they are. They may hurt people, my family, looking for me. Knowing white cloaks, they will. I can stop it if I can get there quickly, but it must be quickly. The light only knows what they've done already. I need you to take me there, Loyal, by the ways. You told me once there was a way gate here, and I know there was one at Menetheron. It must still be there in the mountains above Emmon's Field. Nothing can destroy a way gate, you said. I need you, Loyal.
Well, of course I will help,
Loyal said.
The ways...
He exhaled noisily, and his ears wilted a bit.
I want to write of adventures, not have them. But I suppose one more time will not hurt. The light send it so,
he finished fervently. Fael cleared her throat delicately.
Are you not forgetting something, Loyal? You promised to take me into the ways whenever I asked, and before you took anyone else.
I did promise you a look at a way gate, Loyal said. And what it is like inside. You can have that when Perrin and I go. You could come with us, I suppose, but the ways are not traveled lightly, Fael. I would not enter them myself if Perrin did not have need.
Fael will not be coming, Perrin said firmly. Just you and me, Loyal. Ignoring him, Fael smiled up at Loyal, as if he were teasing her.
You promised more than a look, Loyal. To take me wherever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and before anyone else. You swore to it.
I did, Loyal protested, but only because you refused to believe I would show you. You said you would not believe unless I swore. I will do as I promised, but surely you do not want to step ahead of Perrin's need.
You swore, Fael said calmly. By your mother? And your mother's mother, and your mother's mother's mother.
Yes, I did, Fael, but Perrin...
You swore, Loyal. Do you mean to break your oath?
The Ogier looked like misery stacked on misery. His shoulders slumped and his ears drooped, the corners of his wide mouth turned down, and the ends of his long eyebrows draggled onto his cheeks.
She tricked you, Loyal.
Perrin wondered if they could hear his teeth grinding.
She deliberately tricked you.
Red stained Fael's cheeks, but she still had the nerve to say,
Only because I had to, Loyal. Only because a fool man thinks he can order my life to suit himself. I'd not have done it otherwise. You must believe that.
Doesn't it make any difference that she tricked you? Perrin demanded, and Loyal shook his massive head sadly.
Ogier, keep their word, Fael said. And Loyal is going to take me to the Two Rivers. Or to the Waygate at Menetheron, at least. I have a wish to see the Two Rivers.
Loyal stood up straight.
But that means I can help Perrin after all. Fael, why did you drag this out? Even Lefar would not think this funny.
There was a touch of anger in his voice. It took a good bit to make an Ogier angry.
If he asks, she said determinedly, That was part of it, Loyal. No one but you and me, unless they asked me. He has to ask me.
No, Perrin told her, while Loyal was still opening his mouth.
No, I won't ask. I will ride to Emmonsfield first. I'll walk. So you might as well give up this foolishness. Tricking Loyal. Trying to force yourself in where you aren't wanted.
Her calm dropped away in anger.
And by the time you reach there, Loyal and I will have done for the White Cloaks. It will all be over.
Ask, you anvil-headed blacksmith! Just ask and you can come with us.
Perrin took hold of himself. There was no way to argue her around to his way of thinking, but he would not ask. She was right. He would need weeks to reach the Two Rivers on his horse. They could be there in 2 days, perhaps, through the ways. But he would not ask.
Not after she tricked Loyal and tried to bully me.
Then I'll travel the ways to Manetherin alone.
I'll follow you two.
If I stay far enough back not to be part of your party, I won't be breaking Loyal's oath. You can't stop me following.
That is dangerous, Perrin,
Loyal said worriedly.
The ways are dark. If you miss a turning or take the wrong bridge by accident, you could be lost forever. Or until Machin Shin catches you. Ask her, Perrin. She said you can come if you do. Ask her.
The Ogier's deep voice trembled, speaking the name of Machin Shin. And a shiver ran down Perrin's back, too. Machin Shin. The Black Wind. Not even Aes Sedai knew whether it was Shadow Spawn or something that had grown out of the Way's corruption. Machin Shin was why traveling the Ways meant risking death. That was what Aes Sedai said. The Black Wind ate souls. That Perrin knew for truth. But he kept his voice steady and his face straight.
I'll be burned if I let her think I am weakening.
I can't, Loyal. Or anyway, I won't. Loyal grimaced.
Fael, it will be dangerous for him trying to follow us. Please relent and let him...
She cut him off sharply.
No! If he is too stiff-necked to ask, why should I? Why should I even care if he does get lost?
She turned to Perrin.
You can travel close to us, as close as you need to, so long as it's plain you are following. You will trail after me like a puppy until you ask. Why won't you just ask?
Stubborn humans, the Ogier muttered. Hasty and stubborn, even when haste lands you in a hornet nest.
I would like to leave today, Loyal, Perrin said, not looking at Fael.
Best to go quickly,
Loyal agreed with a regretful look at the book on the table.
I can tidy my notes on the journey, I suppose. The light knows what I will miss being away from Rand.
Did you hear me, Perrin?
Fael demanded. I will get my horse and a few supplies, Loyal. We can be on our way by mid-morning.
Burn you, Perrin Ebarra! Answer me!
Loyal eyed her worriedly.
Perrin, are you certain you could not?
No, Perrin interrupted gently. She is mule-headed, and she likes playing tricks. I won't dance so she can laugh. He ignored the sound coming from deep in Fael's throat, like a cat staring at a strange dog and ready to attack. I will let you know as soon as I am ready. He started for the door, and she called after him furiously.
When is my decision, Perrin Ebarra? Mine and Loyal's. Do you hear me? You had better be ready in 2 hours, or we'll leave you behind. You can meet us at the Dragonwall Gate stable, if you're coming. Do you hear me?
He sensed her moving and shut the door behind him just as something thumped into it heavily. A book, he thought. Loyal would give her fits about that. Better to hit Loyal on the head than harm one of his books. For a moment he leaned against the door, despairing. All he had done, all he had gone through, making her hate him, and she was going to be there to see him die anyway. The best thing he could say was that she might enjoy it now.
Stubborn, mule-headed woman!
When he turned to go, one of the Aiel was approaching, a tall man with reddish hair and green eyes who could have been Rand's older cousin, or a young uncle. He knew the man and liked him, if only because Gaul had never given even a flicker of notice to his yellow eyes.
May you find shade this morning, Perrin. The Magira told me you had come this way, though I think she itched to put a broom in my hands.
As hard as a wise one, that woman.
May you find shade this morning, Gaul. Women are all hard-headed, if you ask me.
Perhaps so, if you do not know how to get round them. I hear you are journeying to the Two Rivers.
Light, Perrin growled before the Aiel could say more. Does the whole stone know?
If Moraine knew, Gaul shook his head. Randall Thor took me aside and spoke to me, asking me to tell no one. I think he spoke to others, too. But I do not know how many will want to go with you. We have been on this side of the Dragon Wall for a long time, and many ache for the threefold land.
Come with me. Perrin felt stunned. If he had Aiel with him, there were possibilities he had not dared consider before.
Rand asked you to come with me? To the Two Rivers?
Gaul shook his head again.
He only said that you were going, and that there were men who might try to kill you.
I mean to accompany you, though, if you will have me.
Will I?
Perrin almost laughed.
I will that. We will be in the ways in a few hours.
The ways? Gaul's expression did not change, but he blinked.
Does that make a difference?
Death comes for all men, Perrin. It was hardly a comforting answer.
I cannot believe Rand is that cruel, Egwene said, and Nynaeve added, at least he did not try to stop you. Seated on Nynaeve's bed, they were finishing the division of the gold Moiraine had provided. 4 fat purses apiece to be carried in pockets sewn under Elaine's and Nynaeve's skirts, and another each, not so large as to attract unwanted attention, to carry at the belt. Egwene had taken a lesser amount, there being less use for gold in the waist. Elaine frowned at the 2 neatly tied bundles and the leather script lying beside the door. They held all of her clothes and other things, cased knife and fork, hairbrush and comb, needles, pins, thread, thimble, scissors, a tinderbox and a second knife, smaller than the one at her belt, soap and bath powder, and it was ridiculous to go over the list again. Egwene's stone ring was snug in her pouch. She was ready to go. There was nothing to hold her back. No, he did not. Elaine was proud of how calm and collected she sounded. He seemed almost relieved. Relieved! And I had to give him that letter, laying my heart open like a stone-blind fool. At least he won't open it until I am gone. She jumped at the touch of Nynaeve's hand on her shoulder. Did you want him to ask you to stay? You know what your answer would have been. You do, don't you? Elaine compressed her lips. Of course I do. But he did not have to look happy about it. She had not meant to say that. Nynaeve gave her an understanding look. Men are difficult at the best. I still cannot believe he would be so... Egwene began in an angry mutter. Elaine never learned what she meant to say, for at that moment the door crashed open so hard that it bounced off the wall. Elaine embraced Sayidar before she had stopped flinching, then felt a moment of embarrassment when the rebounding door slapped hard against Lan's outstretched hand. A moment more, and she decided to hold on to the source a while longer. The warder filled the doorway with his broad shoulders, his face a thunderhead. If his blue eyes could really have given off the thunderbolts they threatened, they would have blasted Nynaeve. The glow of Sayidar surrounded Egwene, too, and did not fade. Lan did not appear to see anyone but Nynaeve. You let me believe you were returning to Tar Valon, he rasped at her. You may have believed it, she said calmly, but I never said it.
Never said it! Never said it! You spoke of leaving today, and always linked your leaving with those dark friends being sent to Tar Valon. Always. What did you mean me to think?
But I never said,
Light, woman, he roared. Do not bandy words with me.
Elaine exchanged worried looks with Egwene. This man had an iron self-control, but he was at a breaking point now. Nynaeve was one who often let her emotions rage, yet she faced him coolly, head high and eyes serene, hand still on her green silk skirts. Lan took hold of himself with an obvious effort. He appeared as stone-faced as ever, as much in control of himself, and Elaine was sure it was all on the surface. "I'd not have known where you were off to if I had not heard that you had ordered a carriage to take you to a ship bound for Tanchico. I do not know why the Amerlin allowed you to leave the tower in the first place, or why Moiraine involved you in questioning Black Sisters, but you three are accepted. Accepted, not Aes Sedai. Tanchico now is no place for anyone except a full Aes Sedai with a warder to watch her back. I'll not let you go into that." "So," Nynaeve said lightly, "you question Moiraine's decisions, and those of the Amerlin seat as well. Perhaps I've misunderstood warders all along. I thought you swore to accept and obey, among other things. Lan, I do understand your concern, and I am grateful, more than grateful. But we all have tasks to perform. We are going. You must resign yourself to the fact."
"Why? For the love of the light, at least tell me why. Tanchico."
"If Moiraine has not told you," Nynaeve said gently, "perhaps she has her reasons. We must do our tasks, as you must do yours." Lan trembled, actually trembled, and clamped his jaw shut angrily. When he spoke, he was strangely hesitant.
"You will need someone to help you in Tanchico. Someone to keep a Tarabonner street thief from slipping a knife into your back for your purse. Tanchico was that sort of city before the war began, and everything I've heard says it is worse now. I could protect you, Nynaeve."
Elaine's eyebrows shot up. He could not be suggesting. He just could not be. Nynaeve gave no sign that he had said anything out of the ordinary. "Your place is with Moiraine."
"Moiraine."
Sweat beaded on the warder's hard face, and he struggled with the words.
I must. Nynaeve, I...
"You will remain with Moiraine," Nynaeve said sharply, "until she releases you from your bond. You will do as I say." Pulling a carefully folded paper from her pouch, she thrust it into his hands. He frowned, read, then blinked and read again. Elaine knew what it said. "What the bearer does is done at my order and by my authority. Obey and keep silent at my command. Swan Sanche, Watcher of the Seals, Flame of Tarvalen, the Amerlin's seat." The other like it rested in Egwene's pouch, though none of them were sure what good it would do where she was going.
"But this allows you to do anything you please," Lan protested. "You can speak in the Amerlin's name. Why would she give this to an accepted?"
"Ask no questions I cannot answer," Nynaeve said, then added with a hint of a grin, "Just count yourself lucky I do not tell you to dance for me." Elaine suppressed a smile of her own. Egwene made a choking sound of swallowed laughter. It was what Nynaeve had said when the Amerlin first handed them the letters. With this, I could make a warder dance. Neither of them had had any doubt which warder she had meant.
"Do you not? You dispose of me very neatly. My bond and my oaths. This letter."
Lan had a dangerous gleam in his eye which Nynaeve seemed not to notice as she took back the letter and replaced it in the pouch on her belt. "You are very full of yourself, Al-Lan Mandragoran. We do as we must, as you will."
"Full of myself, Nynaeve Almira. I am full of myself?"
Lan moved so quickly toward Nynaeve that Elaine very nearly wrapped him in flows of air before she could think. One moment Nynaeve was standing there, with just time to gape at the tall man sweeping toward her. The next, her shoes were dangling a foot off the floor, and she was being quite thoroughly kissed. At first, she kicked his shins and hammered him with her fists and made sounds of frantic, furious protest. But her kick slowed and stopped, and then she was holding onto his shoulders and not protesting at all. Egwene dropped her eyes with embarrassment, but Elaine watched interestedly. Was that how she had looked when Rand... No, I will not think about him. She wondered if there was time to write him another letter, taking back everything she had said in the first, letting him know she was not to be trifled with. But did she want to? After a while, Lan set Nynaeve back on her feet. She swayed a bit as she straightened her dress and patted her hair furiously. "You have no right," she began in a breathless voice, then stopped to swallow. "I will not be manhandled in that fashion for the whole world to see. I will not." "Not the whole world," he replied. "But if they can see, they can hear as well. You have made a place in my heart where I thought there was no room for anything else. You have made flowers grow where I cultivated dust and stones. Remember this, on this journey you insist on making. If you die, I will not survive you long." He gave Nynaeve one of his rare smiles. If it did not exactly soften his face, at least it made it less hard. "And remember also, I am not always so easily commanded, even with letters from the Ammerlin." He made an elegant bow. For a moment, Elaine thought he actually meant to kneel and kiss Nynaeve's great serpent ring. "As you command," he murmured, "so do I obey." It was difficult to tell whether he meant to be mocking or not. As soon as the door closed behind him, Nynaeve sank onto the edge of her bed as if letting her knees give way at last. She stared at the door with a pensive frown. "Poke the meekest dog too often," Elaine quoted, "and he will bite. Not that Lan is very meek." She got a sharp look and a sniff from Nynaeve. "He is insufferable," Egwene said. "Sometimes he is. Nynaeve, why did you do that? He was ready to go with you. I know you want nothing more than to break him free of Moiraine. Do not try to deny it." Nynaeve did not try. Instead, she fussed with her dress and smoothed the coverlet on the bed. "Not like that," she said finally. "I mean him to be mine. All of him. I will not have him remembering a broken oath to Moiraine. I will not have that between us, for him as well as myself. But will it be any different if you bring him to ask Moiraine to release him from his bond?" Egwene asked. "Lan is the kind of man who would see it as much the same thing. All that leaves is to somehow make her let him go of her own accord. How can you manage that?" "I do not know," Nynaeve firmed her voice. "Yet what must be done can be done. There is always a way. That is for another time. Work to be done, and we sit here fretting over men. Are you sure you have everything you need for the waste, Egwene?" "Avienda is readying everything," Egwene said. "She still seems unhappy, but she says we can reach Ruidian in little more than a month if we are lucky. You will be in Tanchico by then." "Perhaps sooner," Elaine told her, "if what they say about sea folk rakers is true." "You will be careful, Egwene. Even with Avienda for a guide, the waste cannot be safe." "I will. You be careful. Both of you. Tanchico is not much safer than the waste now." Abruptly, they were all hugging one another, repeating cautions to take care, making sure they all remembered the schedule for meeting in Tel Iron Riad's stone. Elaine wiped tears from her cheeks. "As well Lan left," she laughed tremulously. "He would think we were all being foolish." "No, he would not," Nynaeve said, pulling up her skirts to settle a purse of gold into its pocket. "He may be a man, but he is not a complete dolt." There had to be time between here and the carriage to locate paper and pen, Elaine decided. She would find time. Nynaeve had the right of it. Men needed a firm hand. Rand would find he could not get away from her so easily, and he would not find it easy to worm his way back into her good graces.